Hello and welcome, and may the fourth be with you. I'm Jessica Meterson, here as always with my blogging buddy, Josh Gilliland. Hi, Josh.
Good evening, Jessica.
And tonight we have with us a very special guest. We are very honored to have the amazing, multi-talented Judge Beckerman with us. Hello, Judge. How are you?
Hello. I'm wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here with us tonight. And the reason I say that you are multi-talented, for those who were not fortunate enough to see your performance last year when you spoke with us at Comic-Con, not only are you a fantastic judge and a brilliant scholar of the Star Wars universe, you also can do Hamilton-esque raps while defending Finn's deserting the stormtroopers, which was really probably brought the house down, I think, last year at Comic-Con. So that is a skill that I've not seen many other people in the legal profession possess. So it obviously impressed me quite a bit.
Thank you. I've never actually received any honors for my rap skills. I appreciate that.
You need to be like Letitia Wright. You know, she apparently did so much rapping on the set of Black Panther that she got like an MC name. Maybe you or your law clerks or somebody need to give you your proper rap name.
MC Beckerman, I like it.
MC Bex, maybe, like, yeah, something like that. West Coast Bex.
Okay. Or Judge MC, that's better.
There you go. Now, I have to ask, was that the first time you'd ever done any kind of rap thing like that in a public forum?
It is. It was my debut.
Were you nervous?
You know, I was a little nervous. It was my first Comic-Con, so I wasn't necessarily nervous for that part of it, but the whole thing was new to me, so I was a little bit nervous going in.
Well, you didn't show it, but it is obviously every time. This is now the third year that Josh and I had done it, and it is so different, obviously. I mean, you're obviously used to being kind of in front of a whole courtroom, and I've certainly done some presenting on, you know, e-discovery and attorney-client privilege, but to have a huge room full of those kind of sort of very devoted Star Wars fans, it can be a little bit intimidating.
I had not anticipated the crowds. I can say that my courtroom is not usually standing room only. So there was, you know, hundreds of people there. So that was a little overwhelming, but so exciting.
Well, we very much appreciated you being there. Like I said, that really was, I think, the highlight of the event. So thank you for that. And now that you've established, or we've established, some of your Star Wars bona fides, let's back up a little bit and talk about, like, where this Star Wars love began. And so maybe if you can kind of, you know, start off with telling me or telling us a little bit about what Star Wars and the Star Wars universe means to you.
Well, first and foremost, Star Wars is really a blending of my childhood in the 1970s and my two sons' childhood more recently. It's the first movie that I ever saw, 1977. I was 5 years old in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. It's one of my first memories. And it's also the first real movie that my oldest son, Jack, saw when he was five. And after that, a very intense multi-year Star Wars phase followed. So I really got to relive my love of Star Wars to my kids. And so the nostalgia is strong on a lot of different fronts for me. And we continue the tradition, even though they're older now. Both my boys are a little bit older. But every time a new movie comes out, we grab 50, 60 tickets. And we don our costumes and watch with our kids, friends, and their family. So it's still a big celebration to this day.
Wow, that is neat. And I do just have to say, we obviously have some similarities. Star Wars, I was four when it came out, and it was the first movie I saw, one of my first memories, and I saw it in Minnesota, so I was not too far from you. So we were maybe watching it on the same night, although back in those days they played forever. But yeah, that I can relate very much to that story and getting to share it then with our children.
You just wanted to point out that I'm older than you, didn't you?
You look younger. That's all that matters.
Oh my. That's awesome. It's so wonderful to hear about that shared experience because of, speaking as the bachelor who was three when the movie came out,
A baby.
Yeah. I don't have a cognitive memory of 77 that clearly. But I remember seeing it either in the theater or the drive-in, and it was just ingrained into my DNA at a young age. to the point of, I remember being four and trying to figure out where I saw the double sunset, because that's what happens when you're really young. But I do have a clear memory of the holiday special and have been in therapy for a long time. You saw it in Iowa. Do you remember like the line experience and like not going to see it?
No, I remember being there, and I remember we went back and went a second time, right? Because it's we weren't looking forward to the DVD release back then. So I remember going twice. I remember just the feeling I had. I was with my sisters, and like I said, a lot of it's a little bit fuzzy, but I definitely remember being there, and it was one of my first memories, so it's pretty awesome.
Did you collect any of the toys when you were a kid?
You know, I didn't have a lot of Star Wars toys as a kid. I had a neighbor who had everything. And so I'd go to his house and play with his toys. And so I collect, you know, I don't collect a lot of things now. My kids went through every Lego set. So we have every, yes. Which I would help them build when they let me. I have a lot of, in my office, in my chambers, I have all the Star Wars Funko Pops. Lined up, and I have the large R2-D2, not as large as the ones we saw at WonderCon, but that's really it on the collection front. I have a series of not great costumes, but kind of cheesy Star Wars costumes, and I think in my car in the judges' parking lot, it's the only one that has the family of clones. I'm guessing, probably the only federal judge who occasionally wears Porg earrings on the bench.
So. Oh, nice!
Kagan's referenced Star Wars, I think, in two opinions now.
Maybe we should send her some earrings, like mine. They're little Porgs. They're very small.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think that would be awesome, because Kagan seems the type who would do that. But it would be fun to do a comparison of Chambers decorations, because you have them. Judge Matt Schrino in New York has them.
A lot.
Yeah, his is epic. Judge Deben has them.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how many others.
I think that's like a photo essay waiting to happen for legal.
I would love to do that. That would be
a judicial survey.
Yeah, how do we pull that off? And
I want, during the congressional, like, you know, hearings and everything, I want, instead of asking for opinions on different legal precedent, I want them to ask if they're Star Wars or Star Trek. And then, you know, like, okay, are you old Star Wars, new Star Wars, Kirk versus Picard? Let's go through some of those questions with the judicial nominees.
It says a lot about a person.
That's right.
Oh, boy. With the movies, which is your favorite?
All right, I'm a little hesitant to answer this one, because I know that the right answer is Empire Strikes Back. Every Star Wars junkie I know picks Empire Strikes Back, but my favorite is Return of the Jedi.
I'm with you on that.
I think it's a gender thing.
It is. I've heard it was way back in the days. I don't know if you ever watched How I Met Your Mother. Barney on How I Met Your Mother could tell how old the women were depending on whether they liked Ewoks or not. Because basically you had to be like under the age of 12 or 13 when Return of the Jedi came out to like Ewoks. So he could tell if you didn't like Ewoks, you were older. Like, it was this whole thing. And I'm like, wow, I was like pretty close to the bubble, but I love the Ewoks. It was weighed all the stuff through the forest. I mean, that was awesome. The Ewoks battling with the stormtroopers, and it had a happy ending. I mean, especially as a kid, Empire Strikes Back was dark.
It was dark. Return of the Jedi, it felt like the grand finale at the time.
Yeah.
Happy ending, and how can you not fall in love with the Ewoks? So maybe that ruins my Star Wars cred, but
no way.
Return of the Jedi. What about you guys?
Well, like I said, I like Return of the, probably either A New Hope, although I also found Luke incredibly whiny in A New Hope, or I did love Return of the Jedi, and in part two, I mean, and we'll get to this, but, you know, I've always loved Leia, of course, and identified with Leia, and I think she got, I mean, there was a whole gold bikini stuff, but she got to be a lot more active, I feel like, in Return of the Jedi too, and they started to give her more and more. For all of those reasons, I like Return of the Jedi. With the qualifier that I like Return of the Jedi as it originally ended. I don't like now George Lucas, you know, inserting Hayden Christensen or all the, like the off-world celebrations and all the different changes he has made to it has kind of tainted it for me. But the original Return of the Jedi, before he started tinkering with it years later, is my favorite.
I did save my Ewok that I got at the time, so I guess I have one vintage Star Wars toy I forgot about.
Wow!
My last Ewok costume at WonderCon. I like walked around with a mask on for a while. They let me try it out. So that might be a Mother's Day gift I'm getting, hopefully.
So mine's Rogue One.
Really? What?
So, and I'll explain. I think it's a tight story, and I think the actual battle that we see in it is the best battle out of all of them because it's land, air, and space all at once. The ship-to-ship fighting's great. The air combat's great. The battle on the ground's fantastic. The heist spy element's very well done. And, you know, it's that World War II-esque feel to it with the mission that victory is getting the job done and nobody survives. But the mission, and I found that exceptionally well done. Now, my favorite experience seeing a movie is Empire. And reason being, I was 5, and in the months leading up to May 25th, 1980, my parents got divorced, found out I was dyslexic, so I had to redo kindergarten, had spinal meningitis and nearly died. So it was really rough several months in there. And my mother took me before she went to paramedic school to see Empire Strikes Back. And we were at the Century 21 Theater in San Jose. And the parking lot was huge. And we were sitting out on a blanket in line because it's not like Fandango exists back then or ordering in advance with credit cards. And I remember the traffic going around us. And sitting in the theater, my legs went to the end of the seat, and I had my drink in one hand, popcorn in the other, and for the entire run of the movie, I didn't move or blink, according to my mother, because I just sat there in rapture watching Empire. So that's one of my favorite experiences, because it was very sweet with my mother before she went to paramedic school. And so like that's a very formative experience for me.
Yeah, that's hard to argue with.
Yeah, you win. That's very sweet. And your mom gets major points for standing in line and waiting for that. That's
yes. Right there.
She earned her sainthood taking us to TimeCon in 1985. And yes, that Christmas, I got an AT-AT. So there's a picture of me in the onesie pajamas, you know, with the feet and that where your feet sweat nonstop, opening the AT-AT and, you know, with a big grin because I love that toy. And we had the snow speeders and it was awesome. So that's a very important part of my childhood. And today, knowing that others are able to have that experience for their children is extremely important. That's part of the magic of Star Wars.
So now that we've talked about favorite movies, how about character? Who's your favorite character?
You tried to segue from Josh's sweaty gym.
Speaking of AT-ATs.
Just because I have hobbit feet.
Wow. You know, you had me with Leia, but right now, as I sit here today, my favorite character is Rey.
Yeah.
And that's because she is self-made, and she's strong, and smart, and adventurous, and I just can't help but appreciate that she's an inspiring and positive role model for girls today. I also like that she's hopeful. Despite everything she's going through, she's always hopeful. So I think she's kind of the Luke Skywalker for this new generation. And I'm just thrilled that there's a female protagonist and that she's nobody's princess.
Yeah. That's good. How about Josh? You can go second this time. Who's your favorite?
Kenobi.
Ah. Young Kenobi or old Kenobi or both?
Both, but I've always liked the Sir Alec Guinness portrayal And whether I was mentoring high school mock trial students or Sea Scouts, my mentor style is a nice mix of Obi-Wan Kenobi and Mr. Miyagi. So I'm...
You're a product of our times.
Very much so.
Yeah, intellectually, I do. I appreciate Ray. My daughter's into Ray. It is heartwarming to see all these little girls who are so into Ray. I also kind of, actually, as an adult woman, the one I relate to most now at this point in my career actually is, and I'm going to butcher her name, but Laura Dern's character. Was it like Vice Admiral Holdo?
Holdo, yes.
You know, I think the whole men not wanting to listen, questioning authority, that sort of thing, I'm like, I can relate a lot to that woman. So intellectually, I probably like her the most. And of course, I also have a soft spot for Laura Dern and have ever since Wild at Heart. But I just can't get over, you know, Princess Leia was just my childhood love. Well, Princess Leia and Darth Vader, actually. I have always loved and really had a little bit of a crush, which is concerning, on Darth Vader.
Oh, so, yes, a really bad boy.
So I think it's that voice. I've always been a sucker for voices. And oh my God, James Earl Jones' voice is so amazing. So I have always loved Darth Vader. And in fact, and we've talked to some other guests about this, and I know like Judge Serino and I have talked about this a lot. To me, the Star Wars movies without Darth Vader just suffer his absence. I mean, this last one, I don't care about Snoke at all. The Last Jedi, Josh and I were talking about it. I did not like it when I saw it in the movie theater, but then my kids wanted to see it, and I rewatched it with them and really did appreciate it. And I do find, actually, General Hux, I find him very funny, like a very entertaining bad guy. He's having to deal with crazy Kylo Ren. But to me, that is, I think, one of the things that all these other movies struggle from is no Darth Vader and no James Earl Jones voice. So he probably is, to me, the central part of the saga.
Yeah, well, I'm okay without Vader. I do adore Laura Dern. And if you watch Last Jedi again, when she shoots the people who are mutinying, you can see her say pew as she pulls the chain. It is so awesome. You just want to applaud. It's like, oh, I love you. That is. It's like, so that was the take you picked. Okay.
So, I like that interpretation.
You can clearly pew.
Now I'm gonna have to watch it a third time.
No, I'm gonna have to watch it too. I did like her character. She was a nice antidote to the mansplain.
Yes. Yes.
She was strong. I liked it.
So I have a theory on the mansplain that, like, yes, it does happen. But I
Thank you for explaining that to two women, Josh.
So that backfired. My theory is Poe might be an ageist because he wanted Leia back in charge, but he does willfully disobey her. So... looking at it, I don't know how much of it is a gender issue versus him thinking that he's smarter than the people who have more experience than him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's always a debate, right, in any individual situation. And I have that debate, Judge. I don't know about you, but I mean, I certainly have that debate sometimes when I have people who don't want to listen to me. I'm like, are they not listening to me because I'm a woman or just because they're arrogant and they're not going to listen to anyone? It is always kind of hard on an individual basis to tell until you get enough data points or enough interactions to really be able to start making, okay, no, I see what's going on here.
Fair point.
I wish we'd seen him interact with Ackbar.
Because
if he did it to Ackbar, then be okay. Then he just thinks he's smarter than everybody else.
Which is a very big convention in American movies, right? I mean, Top Gun, Maverick didn't listen to Tom Skerritt. I forget Tom Skerritt's name. But that is a kind of a whole thing, is a whole Maverick guy who doesn't want to follow military rules, and he's actually going to save the day. So, yes, that is a fair point. I mean, I think didn't Rian Johnson and Laura Dern both kind of make clear that they were sort of setting that up to be a bit of that gender conflict? Because they even talked about that with the way Holdo appeared, and that they dressed her and kind of made her appear like that so that she wasn't what he considered your stereotypical military leader. And he looked, you know, he did not like the fact that she presented as so feminine either. So I'm pretty sure I saw the director talking about that before the movie, or Laura Dern, or both.
Yeah, I thought part of it, they might have planned that, but the timing with like the Me Too movement and the awareness that, like, that was coincidence.
That
happened, but.
But a lot of this is also coming after Hillary and the election. I mean, a lot of this stuff just with women in leadership and the struggles that some people have with accepting that has been something that's been in the news for a while.
Yeah. My mom was a paramedic, and I don't get it. I mean, I don't get, like, feeling threatened by strong women in positions of authority, because mine would carry a fire hose over her shoulder and run up 4 flights of stairs. So, like, I don't...
Wow.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, all 5'4" of her. So, she was very impressive. So, I don't understand the fear factor of it.
It is out there.
It's out there.
Yeah, and I don't experience it because I'm a white male.
That's right. I can send you some studies, though, if you like. I'm always offering to people, send people studies. I'm like, oh, there's a study for that.
I've researched it. I've tried to be understanding, but I don't get why people are jerks.
Just be an ally. And you're a good ally.
Thank you, but I don't understand why people are mean. So it's just one of those.
No.
I don't get it, but...
It's the force, because they've gone to the dark side of the force. That's the problem. We need balance in the force again in our world and in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, some people just don't make no effort to be considerate of others. I think there's a lot of things in play, but yeah, it's just self-centered and being oblivious.
Mm-hmm.
I think you guys deserve kudos. I don't know if you've ever received these kudos, but all the Legal Geeks events and programming, it's all very balanced, both from a gender perspective and a diversity perspective. And let me tell you, like, you know, a lot of Star Wars geeks are white guys, and you manage to make these diverse panels of people who love Star Wars who are not just all white guys, and that's pretty impressive. So kudos.
Well, and that really is all kudos to Josh, and that's why I say he really is a good ally. As much as we have disagreed over some stuff, Josh has always been excellent on that kind of making sure that believing in inclusion and representation, and he doesn't just do it for our panels. He has also helped other people understand that their panels should maybe be a little bit more inclusive. So Josh is a great ally that way, in many ways.
Thank you. I wasn't seeking confirmation of that, but yeah, that means a lot. There was the, was it last year, Stanford did their, one of their legal conferences, and it was all white guys on every panel. Dude, how did you, don't do that. And...
That just happened. I saw something else with it. It was like a forensic something conference where there were basically no female presenters. And so they actually started their own conference instead. And, you know, it sold out immediately. But it is kind of shocking in 2018 how, yeah.
It's like, dude, it's like, don't do that ever. It's good to have people with different life experiences.
Mm-hmm. Different perspectives, yeah.
You want to know, there's two events I've been to recently with my kids that are, one was, I go to a lot of chess tournaments with my kids. 95% boys, and it's just sad that girls self-select out. The other thing I went to this week was a Fortnite tournament. Oh. Got a single gal there. Maybe not surprising, but anyway. Girls sometimes self-select out, but...
They do. There's actually been some interesting things about video games. Planet Money did a thing about actually like a 12-year-old girl who loved video games, and this was now several years ago, and how frustrating it was that the default character in every video game she played, the default was always kind of presented as some sort of white man. And, you know, they showed, and this would even be if they were female developers, because, and that's what I've been talking to my kids a lot about, is, you know, we can all have these kind of hidden biases or implicit biases or just kind of that inherent inherent sexism or racism that we kind of just, we're so used to viewing the world through a white male eye. And I just say my son is obsessed with Fortnite, but it is actually really good. He plays quite frequently with female characters, which according to him, they are some of the default characters. And so at least he does that. But yeah, that is the whole video game. And there's a whole host of issues, I guess, there where it is a tough for women in a couple different ways there. But hopefully it's getting better. And hopefully movies, this is where Hollywood, I'm obsessed with Hollywood and gossip. This is where movies and representation matter, right? Like they showed after all those CSI forensic shows started coming on the air, you know, students interested in forensics shot through the roof, and especially women, because also there were these women forensic scientists. So that's where even like Queen of Katwe, I don't know if you saw that with Lupita Nyong'o.
That was great.
Fantastic movie, but you know, even things like that to hopefully show, or Letitia Wright has talked a lot about playing a scientist and how if she as a child had seen girls, especially girls that look like her, you know, being scientists on TV or in movies, maybe she would have considered it more seriously, although I'm glad she didn't because she's a fabulous actress. But yeah, so hopefully some of these things is, you know, Hollywood can have a positive influence when it chooses to use it. So hopefully as the Star Wars universe and Marvels and some of these other things try to show kind of a more representative view of the world, maybe we'll have some good influences in things like chess and video games too.
Well, it's, you know, like all the watching all the little girls dress up as Rey. I mean, that's, you know, for us it was Luke Skywalker and a little bit of Leia, but you know, Hollywood is pushing the envelope a little bit, and I love to watch it play out.
Yeah, me too.
It's funny to think about the original, because Leia is, you know, the archetype that broke the mold on female heroic characters, and yet she never speaks to another woman in the original trilogy. You know, in Empire, she stands next to the female gunner on Hoth, and neither acknowledges the other's existence. And it's just, it's like, dude, that wouldn't happen in real life. Like, they would... People interact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the prequels are different. Like, I think those at least passed the Bechdel test a couple times. And the current movies are far more representative. And even The Force Awakens barely passed Bechdel. Because Rey doesn't speak to Leia. Leia speaks to Rey at the end. And it was just like, that's... They don't actually talk to each other.
And if you look at percentages, like I think the original Star Wars with Leia there, women, and that was basically Leia, had like 5.7% of the speaking moments. And I think it was either Force Awakens or The Last Jedi. Maybe it was a Force Awakens. Even with Rey as a lead, women still only had 30-something percent of the speaking moments. I don't know if they break it out by word or time. But yeah, so even for the people who are still complaining, there's too many women in this thing. I'm like still not even close to, you know, equals. So
yeah, I think Rogue One probably had the most female characters actually interact with each other.
Oh,
because Mon Mothma and Jyn talk.
Mm-hmm.
I would need to go back, but that this is kind of a sad state where you have to think about how many times did female characters actually talk to each other, and that's not okay, because like you don't think that way with male characters, because they do. It's a very weird, just so weird. And yet we love this.
And they're getting better. So it is. I'm like, look, you know, it's kind of like Maya Angelou said, when you know better, do better, you know? So we're like, it's a process sometimes, especially, you know, both on my own behalf and on my daughters and other young girls. I wish it would go faster, but at least there's progress.
Very true. Well, let's pivot back to Comic-Con and that adventure, because that was so much fun. That's where we met in person. Could you describe the experience on what it was like for you to, you know, to get there and to see the exhibit hall and, you know, and the you know, the fire hose experience of geek culture at its Super Bowl?
You know, the whole experience was epic. I walked in with my 12-year-old Jack, and I mean, both of our heads just exploded when we saw the exhibit hall. I have a bunch of pictures from that moment just when we walked in, and we were, you know, taking selfies with our badges, and we were so excited to be there. And part of it was, you know, it's just exciting for anybody, but to watch it through my kiddo's eyes. He said it was the best weekend he's ever had. And we do a lot of traveling. We do a lot of fun things. And Comic-Con was the best weekend he's ever had. So that's pretty special. The whole event was special. But obviously the highlight was sitting on the panel with all the judges that you invited or some of, you know, some really well-respected judges. So to be there on that panel side by side with those particular judges and talking about Star Wars, I mean, it was surreal.
What topics did you focus on for the panel? Because the way we broke it up was everyone had subject matter, and that's how we could cover the amount of material we did. What were some of your favorite topics?
So I focused on two topics. We already talked about my defense of Finn for desertion. My other topic was actually really fascinating. Judge Graywall and I traced the legal ownership of Anakin's lightsaber from the Battle of Geonosis to Mustafar, when it went into Obi-Wan's hands, to Tatooine, when he gifted it to Luke, to Cloud City, when Luke lost it, and found by a scavenger, ended up with Rey, who tried to give it back to Luke. And we tried to trace the legal transfer of that lightsaber in it. We covered issues from asset forfeiture to adverse possession to intestate succession, and we had to, you know, confront the question of who lineage when it came to Rey. Like, what if Rey is related to Luke Skywalker? And this was all before The Last Jedi came out. So, you know, as with a lot of the programming, we were dealing with interesting and fun legal issues, but real legal issues that really caused us to think hard about how the law would apply to these various scenarios. So that was a lot of fun to think about and then to kind of debate on the stage with Judge Graywall.
I can't remember, did you decide that it would have belonged to Luke or would it belong to Rey? I can't recall what the recollection was.
We'd like to look it up in the air. There were a lot of like what ifs and ors, and so we left it up in the air at the very end.
Yeah, that's true. There are a lot of questions there. So I have to ask, going back to Finn and your rap, like what was your inspiration? Had you seen Hamilton recently, or like how did you decide to do this? I'm going to, number one, talk about the Finn deserting. Number two, I'm going to rap about it. And number three, I'm going to use Hamilton for my inspiration. Like, how did that all come together?
You know, my first thought was that I didn't have a whole lot to say from a legal perspective on defending Finn for desertion. Like, there are a couple theories, but I didn't have, like, you know, several minutes to talk about it. And so I was like, okay, I got to make this a little bit creative. And so while I was preparing for Comic-Con, I was in a big Hamilton soundtrack phase where I was just listening to the whole thing over and over. So I think I was actually listening to the main theme song, and it just clicked with me. Alexander Hamilton, 7 syllables, FN2187, 7 syllables. And so I was listening to the soundtrack and it just popped into my head and I went from there.
Wow. That is awesome.
I speak at a lot of CLEs and my goal is always to share my ideas and my thoughts on the law, but also to make it fun. So that was my goal. And it ended up being a lot of, you know, the most fun for me to try to pull it off. So it was a lot of fun.
Were your kids impressed by your ability to do that?
You know, I think there were only one of my kids was there, but yeah, I think I scored some mom that day.
Nice. And that's hard with kids that age. I know. It takes a lot to impress them.
And I still haven't seen Hamilton, but I'm going to, finally.
It is amazing.
I believe it was Justice Quaylor who said speaking at Comic-Con was the only thing that impressed his kids. So,
excellent.
Which just goes to show with parenting that impressing teenagers is always hard for parents. So,
you know, and there's another magistrate judge on the panel, Judge Mitch Dimba. We were at a very serious meeting of judges, and he brought it up and kind of relived it in front of all these other judges, and they were all just so confused, like, what? You did? So it has to be the right crowd, for sure.
Yeah, there are attorneys that I've met who seem to have had the fun extracted physically from their body, and they no longer have hobbies. It's really sad to interact with those folks. And then there are the others who go like, no, I would, action figures are a wonderful gift and I would put that on my desk. So there's
It takes all kinds. Well, and I think actually diverting for 1 second again, or I will say most lawyers and judges seem so into what we're doing, and they love this geek stuff, and they love Star Wars. Because again, I mean, a lot of us middle-aged people, Star Wars was that huge, it was the Harry Potter of our generation. So it actually now kind of takes me aback when I find a judge or a lawyer who has no interest in Star Wars or any of that at all. I'm kind of, you know, again, maybe once they're older, I get it. But otherwise, it's always a little bit surprising now.
Yeah, you're like, what's wrong with you? You know, I was surprised at how many lawyers showed up for the cons, like at both Comic-Con and then WonderCon. There were a lot of lawyers in the crowd, so they're showing up for these events.
Yeah. We had a two-hour line to get into our panel. There were some state court judges who didn't make it in and a couple DAs, so I feel bad for them, but... Let's pivot to the other con, because we just had WonderCon back in March, and that was one of the best con experiences I've ever had. That was just so much fun, where we did the mock trial of R2-D2 and C-3PO suing the cantina, and we picked a hearing. And while we heard the lawyers argue, you know, we didn't, you know, like, get your thoughts on it. And so could you share your thoughts on, like, what were the biggest legal issues for these fictional characters in this lawsuit?
You know, I agree. It was a great experience. It was my first mock trial at one of the con events, and it was I found it to be a lot of fun, and the lawyering to be actually top-notch, better than some of the lawyering I see in my real cases, frankly. They did a great job. And, you know, as with a lot of the Legal Geeks programming, it raised some really interesting contemporary legal issues. You know, the main issue was whether droids qualify as persons under the discrimination laws, and that question is going to have implications for artificial intelligence in our very near future. The droid expert in our trial testified that droids exhibit intelligent behavior. They can learn from experience and make decisions and apply their knowledge to new situations. They have emotions, and all of that sounds pretty human, but they were obviously not born from a biological mother. They're not humans. So the question of how advanced AI needs to be to qualify for legal protection is a question that we're going to need to face really soon. I think maybe the more controversial issue that came up as I was listening to the lawyers' arguments is whether the cantina had a legitimate business interest in kicking out the droids. They had argued that they kicked them out because of bad droid behavior in the past by other droids who had caused trouble in the cantina. And that argument sounded a lot like arguments that we've heard in recent weeks as people are kicked out of coffee shops or golf courses. And so even though the mock trials are fun, especially for Star Wars geeks, all of the programming, these mock trials, are raising some really important legal issues. They all really speak to some of the contemporary legal issues that we're seeing in our real courtrooms today.
It's almost like I thought about it.
Coincidence.
How'd that happen? Yeah, it's there's a lot there and a lot to unpack, where people should be able to go golf and not have the police called. And
nice one. Good topical reference.
Yeah, like that sort of thing shouldn't happen. And it raises wonderful issues with the public accommodation laws.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, it should make lawyers sit up, and it should make everyone sit up and go like, no, that's not who we are. And the droids were a good foil for that discussion.
The other sort of, I thought, interesting issue, I was just being silly. The reason that you asked me for my opinion on the case is because I ended up recusing myself from the final decision and leaving it up to the jury, the audience, to decide if the cantina should win or the droid should win. And part of that was I just happened to have a BB-8 dress on because I was dressed for the time. And so I claimed bias in favor of the droids, and I had to recuse myself, and I was just being silly. But at the same time, that's actually another really real legal issue that we deal with all the time is who, you know, what cases can we decide, and can we be completely unbiased? And, you know, the droids were really cute, and I really liked them, and obviously that was silly. But again, it raises a legal issue that we need to think about in our real life.
Yes, there are cases happening right now where that comes into play.
So back to Star Wars, we've learned that they actually just had some new news, I guess. You know, Star Wars at this point, the Star Wars universe, kind of like the Marvel universe, they are just constantly turning out new products, new avenues to tell stories. And so one area that I have not delved into too much, although I think I did a bit of Star Wars Rebels, the animated series, but I haven't done a lot outside of the traditional movies, I guess, however many of those we're up to now. But they just announced a new animated show that's supposed to set, what is it, Star Wars Resistance, which is going to take place in that period of time prior to The Force Awakens. So I guess we kind of get to see how they get to where they are in The Force Awakens, between The Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. And I do think it's kind of neat how they use these animated shows to fill in some of these holes. Judge, have you ever watched any of these animated shows? Are you into this part of the Star Wars universe?
You know, not super into it, but I think I sat through a lot of Clone Wars with my oldest son when that was on, but nothing recently.
Josh, you like Clone Wars, right? I think you were saying that was a really good one.
Clone Wars was excellent. They jumped into a lot of complex, deep issues about war and whether or not a clone's a person. There was a 4-part arc that they had with the Death of Fives where, you know, they discover the conspiracy and they get so close to figuring out Order 66, and you know that they don't, and so it's heartbreaking and frustrating watching all of this go down. It does fill in some nice gaps for doing insanity defense analysis on clones who carried out Order 66, but it was, you know, it's like, that's a show for like kids who are 5 to 7, and it poses deep questions. I loved Rebels. I thought Rebels was excellent, and they did a lot of nice homages to different sci-fi and Star Wars references, and even a little, like one of them had a little homage to Wrath of Khan, which was very fun. But with the other, we have Solo coming out soon. We have Episode 9 in development. There's the Jon Favreau live-action show that's going to be on the Disney On Demand service.
Is that targeted towards like young adults, or is it?
Don't know. Allegedly, from what the press release said from Kathleen Kennedy, he's the showrunner, and the opportunity they have is to make sure that you have women and non-white guys to direct and write it. And Favreau is good with TV. He loves the source material. And this could be a really good way to help diversify the creative team, helping make Star Wars. So I'm optimistic about that.
Hmm.
You have the two guys from Game of Thrones, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, doing a trilogy. And then you have the Rian Johnson trilogy. So I don't know if they're going to
like... Holy fudge!
So with the trilogies, I don't know if they're going to be like alternating years, and so like that, or if they're going to stop doing standalone movies. I really love the standalone movies because you could just focus on like one thing in one era, and for a casual viewer, like if I were to take a family member who's not into Star Wars or a date, like I don't have to like do this long explanation of like what's what.
Here's 200 hours of content you need to know before you see this movie.
Yeah, because that's going to end well. So we have all these things coming out. So, you know, Judge Beckerman, in your opinion, what makes a Star Wars film meaningful to you?
You know, it's interesting. Again, I think it might be a gender line thing, because you hear Jessica and I talking about how cute the Ewoks are, and you keep talking about the battle scenes and all that, and the meaning of war, and... You know, thinking back over all these years, there's really three things that tie the Star Wars movies together for me as a 45-year-old woman. First of all, I still enjoy the humor in all the movies, whether it's the Porgs watching Chewbacca or Rey feeling the Force or almost every BB-8 scene. I just think they're funny, and there's humor in all the movies. And now when I watch them, it's also the nostalgia. I loved Force Awakens and Last Jedi because of the kind of throwback references in the films. And yeah, I insist on seeing every new movie in the theater on opening weekend, because you're surrounded by other Star Wars geeks and they go crazy for those scenes. So in Force Awakens, the first time we see Millennium Falcon, and then Han Solo, and then Chewbacca, and then Leia, and then C-3PO and R2-D2, and every time the crowd would just erupt and go nuts. and start applauding and cheering. And so that to me is magical. Like that shared experience of people of my generation, that's really special. And finally, it's, you know, again, it's not necessarily the battle scenes for me. It's really more of the Star Wars spirituality, I'll call it, is what ties all the movies together. I'm not a religious person necessarily, but I do believe in the Force and the themes that come through in all the movies of what it takes mindfulness and concentration and focus to harness the Force. That's spiritual to me, and that's something that's tied all the movies together, and that leaves me walking out of the theater really thinking about those type of issues. And so that's one reason I love the movies.
That's wonderful. It's the, for me, the issue of faith and Chirrut Imwe in Rogue One is one of my favorite characters right after Kenobi, because there's somebody who takes massive leaps of faith as a blind person who's able to take out a squad of stormtroopers with a stick. I love those issues. And in the way that Last Jedi ended with that issue of faith and, you know, everyone inspired and the stable boy using the Force to pull the broom towards him. It's like wonderful. And I do think Rian Johnson hit a home run with that last moment of the film.
See, and for me, and maybe it's because I'm a political junkie and a pessimist at the same time, I think one of the things that I've liked the most about the Star Wars movies is that constant push-pull of people and societies between kind of the light side and the dark side, you know, and it kind of goes back to the old expression, this too shall pass. So you can have the periods of peace and kind of, you know, wisdom, but those unfortunately will pass, and then you will have the dark days, but those too will pass. So I don't know, you know, and I think one of the things that I guess I appreciate, as much as I would love the idea of a happy ending, being a cynical pessimist, I always kind of roll my eyes at happy endings. So I do like the idea that even after all these years, Star Wars is like, look, things can get better for a while, but they're going to get bad again, and you have to keep fighting. I mean, I think as we've learned in our current world, you can't ever relax and think everything's okay. We're a little bit smarter now than we used to be. Like, it does require constant vigilance and constant fighting to ensure that, you know, the good side is what? Maintained, supported, helped to thrive.
Right. Politics is cyclical. You might have 4 years of light, but the dark side always.
Yes. That's yeah, it's. And from a certain point of view.
But see, with that and the humor then, and I do think they do a very good job with the humor, and I do need humor mixed in with my pessimism. It's the only way to keep on going. You got to be able to laugh.
Do you need a hug? I worry about you.
I told you, I am permanently in the sunken place at this point, yes.
I worry.
Yes.
I'll send you a comfort pork. It's going to be okay.
And it's like, look, if Leia can put up with everything she put up with and keep on going, darn it, I can't complain.
So to pivot towards the end, Your Honor.
To not end on a downer note.
What are your hopes for the future for Star Wars?
You know, so long as they keep feeding me about one movie a year so that I can celebrate the tradition with my family. That's all I ask for.
Works for me.
So, yeah.
I want one a year. Having a TV show is fun because not everyone watches it, but I do and I enjoy them. It's also stuff I can blog about, so yay. A movie a year is the right amount in my view. Marvel, it's okay to do a few a year because they're different characters. One a year is a good thing for Star Wars.
And I do say, you know, obviously Disney owns all of it, but, and I love a lot of the Marvel stuff, obviously, but to me, Star Wars, and again, it goes back to, I guess, that nostalgia point and the fact that, you know, it was what our childhood was so formed around. But Star Wars is special. So to me, that is, the Star Wars movie should still be an event. And so that is the thing where I do worry a little bit, and obviously they know what they're doing. But yeah, the TV shows are okay because you can, they give nice background, they can make the movies more fleshed out and richer. But I want that kind of event movie maybe once a year. Because obviously if you start to have them all the time, it sort of cheapens that special Star Wars experience.
Yeah, even though I would totally love to go to Portland for a movie with you guys, that does sound pretty epic. So,
come on up.
Your Honor, thank you so much for your time.
Yes, thank you very much.
It has been a pleasure. May the 4th be with both you and your...
And hopefully we'll be back to San Diego Comic-Con this year. So
I hope to see you there.
Awesome. Me too.
Everyone, stay geeky. Stay geeky, America.